93.5, 95.3, the new Connect FM. It is the Tay and Jay Show. I am Lon Tay. He is Jeremy Warner. And we've got a nice little treat for you because we like when we get the folks from the Champaign-Urbana area back on the air. And that's what we're doing today with David Woods from the Indy Star. David, how are you today?
Well, I'm still awake. It's been a pretty exhausting run, but I think I've got enough adrenaline to carry me through to the finish line.
And David, you're still covering college basketball. Did you think you'd be covering it this far? And it's not even Purdue or Notre Dame.
Yeah, but Butler has had an amazing run. This is the 11th season I've covered the team, and it's kind of been really one amazing circumstance after another, but this certainly overrides everything.
Butler, a four-point underdog, but I'm telling you right now, David, I'm never going against Butler again. I'll never go against that team again. I mean, they've got the veteran leadership. They've got Shelvin Mack, Matt Howard. I mean, this team could win this game tonight easily, couldn't they?
Yeah, I don't. Do you think Connecticut 2011 is as good as Duke 2010?
No, I don't think so. I agree. That's a good point.
They certainly have a chance, and it's almost not that the story needs any embellishment, but you know, really, Butler's seed is very inappropriate given their resume. They should have been a 10 or 11 seed given its resume. They played Old Dominion in the first game, and really, Old Dominion had a better resume than Butler in every measurable category. But they've been extraordinary these last 2 months, and their rate of improvement has just been so rapid. But I don't think even given that anyone could have foreseen anything like this.
David Woods from the Indy Star joining us live from Houston. And you brought it up. Well, both of us, Lon and I, both picked Old Dominion to win that first round game. So does that make? I mean, this tournament run, how does it compare to last year's?
Well, last year was amazing, partly given, you know, Butler's humble beginnings and how bad the program was 20 years ago. And, you know, I chronicled that in my book, Underdogs, and just kind of how that gradually built the program back, and it culminated in that way. But Butler was nationally ranked all year and was a good team. And for basketball people, you know, it wasn't maybe quite as shocking to the general public. Well, I think this is shocking both to basketball people and to casual sports fans, as it should be. I mean, no one could have seen this coming. Butler was 14-9 2 months ago, coming off three straight losses and a loss to Youngstown State, which I think is somewhere around like 250th or 300th in RPI. But they have certainly pulled themselves together.
And David Woods, Indy Star, I mean, they do a phenomenal job on the defensive end, and I think that's where if you're a young kid watching this team, that's what you love. I mean, they just flat out just get after you on the defensive end, and they can disrupt you, can't they?
They're very disruptive, and I felt last year, and I'm seeing some this year, I think over the course of 40 minutes, I think opponents just really get sick of playing against Butler. It is just not fun. It's like by the end, they're like, Coach, I'm just kind of had it with this whole scene. These guys is just not fun at all.
How do you, I mean, Brad Stevens, what is the strength of Brad Stevens among many strengths? What's the one thing that stands out to you, David, in covering this guy? What's the one thing that you really like about Brad Stevens?
Well, I think the thing that strikes me is he's both artist and scientist. In other words, he's very good on the game prep, X's and O's, breaking down that. But he's also, you know, is a very good teacher and has a personality that causes him to have good rapport with the players. It seems like most coaches, even successful ones, would kind of lead more to one or the other. Maybe either be a great tactician and do it that way, or be kind of more of like a motivator, recruiter type. And he seems to have successfully blended, you know, both of those components.
David, what's it going to take for another school to lure him away from Butler?
I don't know. You could probably appreciate this. He's sort of changing his own job. I mean, Butler does not have unlimited resources, but he's, on the other hand, he's really not looking to get a $4 million payday and disrupt his lifestyle with his wife and two young children. So, you know, forever's a long time. You could never say forever, but certainly none of the jobs out there now, I think, have much appeal to him. And Butler is probably going to do whatever it can to keep him because, you know, giving him more money and keeping the basketball program going probably is leveraged to improve the entire university. It's probably, absolutely, on a cost-benefit ratio, it's probably a pretty small cost compared to a very great benefit.
David Woods from the Indy Star joining us live from Houston. Butler taking on UConn. And David, you're U of I grad. How does an Illinois Final Four run, say 1989, compare to what Butler's done, a school of 4,500? What's the difference of just going there and just the storylines that come with it?
Well, it was you know, it's certainly momentous when the Flying Illini in 89 and the tremendous comeback and Final Four run by Illinois in 2005. That, again, that's sort of a, you know, that's not an expectation, but that's certainly a hope of a program like Illinois, which I think is a pretty good case, is really one of the premier programs in college basketball history and maybe the premier program among schools that don't have an NCAA championship. But for something like this to happen to a, you know, at a small school, you know, of course, it's very, you know, Hoosiers-esque and Milan High School-esque, or even like really... The school in Illinois, Hebron, was very much like Milan, right. And just 2 years earlier, people kind of forget that their story was every bit as romantic as that of Milan High School in Indiana. It's just not the kind of thing you'd like ever expect to happen. And like Gannett News columnist Michael Presti told me yesterday, a once in a lifetime moment is not supposed to happen twice, and that's what we've had in these back to back championship games by Butler. It's just. You can't hardly even find the English words to describe it precisely.
All right, David, real quick now, if you can, I know you've written a book about Butler, I believe, correct?
Yeah, it's about their Final Four run last year. It's called The Underdogs, the UNDERDAWGS.
Okay, and how can we get that book?
Well, I think it's in local bookstores there in Champaign, and if it's not, it's one closest to, it's certainly on Amazon. And if you just went to Google and typed up Underdogs, DAWGS, and David Woods, it is available at multiple online sites. So it's pretty easy to buy.
Well, David, now you got a chance to write another book, right?
I think Scribner is going to do something. I don't know if we'll update or what we'll do, but it's out of my hands. I'm leaving it up to them. It takes the pressure off me.
So, David, if there's a key for tonight for Butler, what is it? Is it the big guys playing against Oriaki and Okwandu down there? What do you think the key is going to be tonight?
Yeah, I think that's one. I think they've got to hold their own inside and on the boards. I think they need to keep their turnovers really low. I mean, Connecticut made quite a few turnovers against Kentucky's pressure. And if, you know, Butler can win that turnover battle, you know, that really allows them a few extra possessions. And even though this Butler team hasn't been tremendously dependent on the three, they made a lot of timely threes, and I think they would need Sheldon Mack to have another good game and some of the role players step up. Butler has got some tremendous contributions off the bench, especially from freshman forward Kyle Marshall.
Yeah, big time. David Woods, he's an Urbana native and a U of I graduate, now writes for the Indy Star, and he's in Houston for this game tonight. We appreciate you coming on and joining us, David, and have fun tonight, and who knows? Maybe we'll see the Bulldogs cut down those nets and win that national title.
Okay, well, thanks very much for having me on.
Not a problem. That is David Woods from the Indy Star, again, in Houston. That's going to be a fun game tonight, my man.
Yeah, we'll break it down next in the T&J Show, 93.5,
95.3. The new Connect FM. Show 93.5, 95.3, the new Connect FM 531. It is Monday, but it's not a normal Monday. It's National Championship Monday, Jeremy.
Yeah, we got to have a big game today.
Yes, we do.
Finally crown an NCAA championship, and who would have thunk it? It's going to be Butler or UConn. I mean, a month ago, we would have laughed at that.
I agree.
I mean, you go UConn team that was really struggling in the Big East play. Now they've rolled off 10 straight wins, win the Big East title. Don't know if they have legs to get through to the NCAA title. They do. Now you have Butler, a team that was the underdog last year. Well, they're back. The Bulldogs are back in the title game.
And Brett Dawson is joining us. Brett, how are you, buddy?
Good. How you guys doing?
Doing great. You're fresh. Are you still at the Final Four? Or you've returned, I guess, right?
I have returned from the Final Four, yes. A triumphant return.
How was it?
There were dozens of people waiting for me at the airport.
Did they have the Dawson limo sitting right there?
Yeah, the guy with the little sign up. Yeah, he took me right out to my car.
What was Reliant Stadium like? Was that a pretty cool place to watch a game?
It's an awful place to watch a game, to be honest with you. I don't like this development. I understand this development of moving Final Fours to these big, giant venues. but it's a terrible place to shoot. You know, the first game the other night, both teams hit a couple of threes. I think their three-point percentages were okay, but they missed so many other shots. They missed a lot of shots, both teams, a lot of shots in the second game by both teams. I just think it's a terrible place to shoot. Hopefully tonight those two teams will be a little more accustomed to it and we won't see such bad shooting. But there's no shooting background to speak of. Fans are so far away from you. It's a really, really terrible setup.
Brett Dawson from the Louisville Courier-Journal covers Kentucky, played UConn the other night and lost. Brett, I mean, did you talk to the players? Did that affect them? I know they're used to playing in some of these big arenas, but this is ridiculously huge arena.
You know, I didn't really ask anybody about it. There was so much to do in the last game of the year always. There's so many things to talk about. We didn't really talk about it, but I do think the fact that everybody had some trouble with it, and Butler and VCU made some three-pointers, but they took a lot, too. I just think it's an odd thing, and you know, Terrence Jones at Kentucky, for example, is not a good free-throw shooter, but he's not an 0-for-5 free-throw shooter, and he's a guy who actually shoots them better under pressure, and yet in the pressure of the national championship game, he misses all five. I think some of that shooting background, I don't think all of that is a kid who can't handle the weight of a big game.
Well, Brett, I mean, you covered Illinois here. They went to the Final Four that year, but that was kind of expected. I mean, Kentucky gets there this year. Really unexpected run. What did you think of that, and how many UK fans were actually there?
A lot. They had the overwhelming majority of fans. In fact, I'm not sure they didn't have more than the other three schools put together. UConn didn't have many at all, and I would think tonight's going to be a real interesting dynamic. From the reports I hear from people who are still there, Kentucky and VCU still have more fans there than UConn does because UConn just doesn't travel very well. It's not a really big school. They don't have a really big fan base. It's not in a really big state. So you just don't have that many fans. It was overwhelmingly blue in there, and I'm sure the Houston Chamber of Commerce not real happy with the outcome on Saturday night. But you're right, very unexpected situation. I mean, that Illinois team was very different in the fact that, you know, had they not rallied from that big deficit against Arizona, it would have been a disappointing year. That team, if it didn't make the Final Four, the borderline disappointment not to win the championship, but certainly disappointing if they hadn't made the Final Four. This Kentucky team, you know, last year a big disappointment that they didn't get all the way not only to the Final Four but win the championship, at least a big disappointment for those players and for a lot of fans. Next year's team, if they keep anybody around, is going to have, again, the number one recruiting class, a little bit more complete class than this one was. And so I think, you know, after last year, everybody started to circle this year, especially after Enes Kanter was ruled ineligible. Everybody sort of started to circle next year as the year they'd get back to the Final Four. So this one kind of came in between the two, and I think it was a real pleasant surprise for Kentucky's fans, and I certainly never saw it coming.
Brett Dawson from the Courier-Journal down in Louisville. And Brett, I mean, Kentucky, they're loaded again, but we saw them in the Elite Eight last year with John Wall, DeMarcus Cousins, all those NBA players. They got to the Elite Eight but couldn't get past that. This year they get to the Final Four. Can Calipari's model win it all?
I don't know. I mean, I think the question is maybe, because I think that, you know, you look at the situations, they shot 33%, you know, Saturday night. They're a very good shooting team. Last year's team had some holes in it. It wasn't a good outside shooting team. You could kind of zone them. This year's team wasn't great inside, but Josh Harrelson developed. I mean, I think it's at this point it's a little unfair to say, well, he's not winning championships. He can't win a championship this way. There's a lot of guys not winning championships, and they have veteran players. You know, he's getting this far with this kind of talent as young guys in his freshman class. You know, Partia says maybe he's never going to do it. Partia says, look, a lot of teams get places with good players and can't quite get over the hump. Maybe he's going to do it eventually with this kind of team once the breaks go his way. So I think it's a little tough to say that there's a hard and fast rule that his model can't do it.
You got to see UConn live, Brett. I mean, what was it like watching that team and Kemba Walker? Jeremy Lamb has just taken off in this thing, 11 of 17 from the three-point line in this tournament. What was it like watching UConn, and what strengths do they have, minus Kemba Walker, that they can bring against Butler tonight?
Well, I've got to see him twice, and let me tell you, I preferred the venue the first time because it was the Maui Invitational,
exactly.
And that's a little bit better trip than Houston for the old sports writers. But, you know, it's funny. You mentioned Kemba Walker and Jeremy Lamb. Now, let me ask you this question. Who's UConn's third best scorer?
Ooh.
Good question.
Don't know.
There is no answer to that question. There isn't really a third scorer. And that's the really interesting thing about this Final Four. I saw somebody say today, I think Jay Billis said on Twitter, this will be the most losses combined by two teams that are playing in the national championship game ever.
Yeah.
I assume it's also the most losses combined for all four Final Four teams. This is a case of four teams that got hot. You see this once or twice in some Final Fours. We saw it with all four teams this year. They got hot at the right time. They beat some teams you maybe didn't think they would beat. I think that you get into this situation, UConn, I think, should be the favored team. But they've got a lot of holes. And one of those holes is they really only have two guys that score. They have a really athletic team, a long team. All those guys are kind of interchangeable parts because none of them are really great, you know, offensive players. They don't bring – they don't have another guy who you say, well, that guy's a real defensive stopper. They're just a bunch of really versatile athletes. I think they're much more athletic than Butler. I don't know if they have as many pieces that fit together in an offensive way as Butler does. I think it's a real interesting game, but I think that UConn, because of – you talk about Kemba Walker, you talk about Jeremy Lamb, I think they have the chance to just out-athlete almost anybody they play, and I think they can do that to Butler.
Right, you bring up the flaws of UConn, and I think that's kind of in college basketball now. With these young teams, you're going to see some flaws. Are the stars finally aligning where a mid-major like Butler can pull this ridiculous run off and win a national title? Do you think that's just the way college basketball is going?
You know, it's hard to say this with Butler because they were just here last year, but you almost do feel like if they can't do it this year, when can they do it? Because this is the year to get the big dog that's from the power conference that gets to the title game. Because I think Connecticut – look, I think Connecticut looked tired against Kentucky. Just Kentucky did too. Those are two teams that don't play a ton of guys. You know, Connecticut does have some interchangeable parts, but not a lot of interchangeable scorers. I think they have a lot of guys who have to play a lot of minutes just like Kentucky does. And I think they looked a little worn down. John Calipari told his team, you get after these guys, get in them defensively, you're going to hold them to 56 points, and that's going to be enough for us to win. He turned out to be exactly right. He told his players that before the game. Every player confirmed that story. He said 56. That's all they got, but it wasn't enough for Kentucky. They needed 57, and they only got to 55. But that's a low-scoring game between those two teams, and I think part of the reason was fatigue. You know, I don't know if Butler can pressure Connecticut the same way and wear them out, but I think they're gettable, and it does feel like if ever somebody's going to do it, this is the year. I still think Connecticut's going to win the game, but Butler's got a great chance.
Kentucky beat writer Brett Dawson from the Louisville Courier-Journal joining us. Saw UConn up close. I mean, Butler was down there. How much does senior leadership matter? I mean, Kentucky doesn't have a lot of it. How much does it matter when you get into these games like this?
Well, I think it does matter, and I think Kentucky had quite a bit of it. Not senior leadership, only one senior, but the juniors really helped get them there, Darius Miller, and especially DeAndre Liggins, who was kind of less publicized than Brandon Knight and Josh Harrelson in this tournament run. But I thought, a guy who Illinois fans are very familiar with, obviously, I thought really was the MVP in getting them to the Final Four. I think veterans matter. You know, the Kentucky guys, here's something you don't hear guys say every day. Josh Harrelson, a senior at Kentucky, said, you know, I thought the first half, we tensed up. We played tight on the big stage, and I think it helped that Kemba had been there before. And Kemba Walker didn't play a lot, but played as a freshman on a Final Four team. I think he had somebody who had been, you know, Connecticut had somebody who had kind of been through that before. I think that's a big advantage for Butler. I just think that having been there, until you go to the Final Four and see what a big stage it is, and I mean that literally and figuratively, because the way the court's set up, just the same way it was in Indianapolis, you're on a big stage. You're on a big elevated court at the 50-yard line of a giant football stadium. And then there's also all this other stuff that goes with it. There's so much media, so much more than you do during the year, even if you're Connecticut or Kentucky or whatever. I think that sort of experience is difficult to do for the first time. I think it really helps if you have one guy like Kemba Walker, or you got a whole bunch of guys like Butler does who have been through it once before.
You've got two coaches here on opposite ends of the spectrum. Brad Stevens, in his fourth year at Butler, has done an unbelievable job there. In fact, in four seasons, Butler, 117-24. But on the other side, Brett, you've got Jim Calhoun, who could become the oldest coach to win a national championship. We talked about it earlier on the Tay and Jay show. If he wins this, it's his third title. It puts him in the group with Wooden, Rupp, Krzyzewski, and Knight. Do you think of Jim Calhoun, in the same breath of those guys?
I don't. I mean, I don't think anybody does, but the one thing he's done is he's hit for a really high average. I mean, they've gotten to the Final Four just a few times, and they win it twice, and now there's a chance with another appearance to win it again. So, I mean, you know, that's one thing. He's really taken advantage of those opportunities. He's a very good tournament coach. He's good on a short turnaround. They haven't lost a tournament game all year. And by that, I mean they won Maui, they won the Big East, and now they have a chance to win the NCAA. So, I mean, I think his record as a tournament coach is indisputable. Now, the other thing, you know, Jim Calhoun, his age has been accentuated this week because the two coaches in the opposite semifinal are younger than him put together, Brad Stevens and Shaka Smart. That's been accentuated. I also think Jim Calhoun rescued by the fact that he got to play John Calipari. Because Calipari, there's always a lot of smoke around Calipari's teams. You know, no fire with Calipari, but a lot of smoke. Everybody talks about Calipari in those two vacated Final Fours. He's not found guilty of any NCAA violation, but two Final Fours off the books. really keeps people. There was almost no talk at the Final Four about the fact that Jim Calhoun could win a national championship, then be suspended for the first three games of last year for violating NCAA rules. Next year, excuse me.
Why is that? I mean, so it seems like Calhoun gets a little bit of a pass here.
Well, I think for one thing, he's won a couple of titles, and those titles have stood. We haven't seen anything in the same situation. You know, there's no banner being folded up like the Fab Five or with John Calipari's teams, so you don't have that sort of thing. And then I think, too, you know, again, it's an issue of timing. I think if he had gotten to this Final Four and John Calipari wasn't there, you'd have had a lot more talk about it. The fact of the matter is, despite the championships, Connecticut is much less known a commodity on a national scale than Kentucky. If you're a casual basketball fan, the kind of people who, you know, TV and newspapers who are coming in for the Final Four weekend, if you're going to write about something or feature something for a large audience, you're much more likely to talk about Kentucky than Connecticut. And I think that really was a help to Calhoun. I really think it detracts a little bit from the amount of talk that people do about that.
Brett Dawson from the Louisville Courier-Journal. Last question I got for you, Brett, is I know you've been covering college basketball here for a while. Is this coaching carousel any different from the ones you've seen in the past? Just all the movement we've seen, Missouri going after somebody, Lon Kruger leaving another school. I mean, what's this year been like on the coaching carousel?
Well, to me, it is a little different in the sense that Brad Stevens seems almost ungettable, which is, I think, a real departure from the way it would have been 5 years ago, and certainly 10 or 15 years ago. When you hear people talk about who they want to go get, most people don't talk about Brad Stevens. I think there's a handful of jobs that they open up. If Indiana were to make a move someday, you know, if John Calipari jumps to the NBA, you have those really elite level jobs. They might think they could go get Brad Stevens, but I don't think Missouri even has an illusion that they could go get him. I don't think there's any thought that they could get a guy like that. That's a big dramatic change. Looks like Shaka Smart might turn down a job or two and stay at VCU. Nice. I think one thing you are seeing in the coaching carousel, and there's always going to be movement, guys are always going to leave for bigger and better and better paying jobs, but I do think you're seeing some guys who are kind of going to the Mark Few school, I guess you could call it, who are going to say, you know, I've put myself in a position at this job that I can be really choosy. If I don't think NC State's a good job, I'm not going to take it. I'll stay where I am. I'll ride it out. If you're Brad Stevens, you can have two or three bad years right now. If you're Shaka Smart, you can step back a little bit next year and not be great. And people are still going to remember these runs that you've had. And I think coaches, athletic directors are still going to find you appealing coaches in a year or two. So I think it's smart for those guys to be selective. And I do think that that's a trend we'll see a little bit more of, because I do think the other thing we're going to see with Butler and VCU, teams like that make it to the Final Four, there's going to be pressure on schools at their level. Some other schools are going to start to pay. That's going to be a domino effect, and those guys are going to get paid a little more. And so if you can get to a Final Four twice when you're Brad Stevens, and if you can get Butler to give you a pretty significant amount of money, it's very, very hard to get you to leave that job.
Brett Dawson, the biggest question of the day, though, is this. When I'm watching the one shining moment tonight, am I going to see an Illini player?
That is a really good question.
I got to know, because I look for it every year.
My suspicion, you know, I didn't see Illinois' first game. Not very much of it, the one where they played so well. I don't know if there was like a great celebration or anything like that, or if they had one great highlight. That's what you need. You need like a chest-pounding guy.
Davis chest pound, yeah. That's what you need out there.
That's really the key. You know, you got to do that, and you got to get the right guy looking at the right time. You know, I'm going to go with no, but you never know.
Oh, all right, Brett Dawson, go with no on that. That could just make for a bad night.
I don't want to ruin your night.
That was the best question I've heard you have in a long time.
Great.
He gets one every once in a while.
Yeah.
Man.
I usually just throw it in.
Blind squirrels and
exactly.
You know,
exactly.
That sort of situation.
Brett Dawson, thank you, buddy. I mean, we appreciate the fact that you were in Houston. You've been there and you've seen this, been there, done that. So we appreciate your input into this national title game tonight. Have fun watching it, my man.
Will do. We'll be rooting for the local kid here, Shelvin Mack. He's the starting guard at Butler. Very good player, Lexingtonian. I think we're all pulling for him.
Sweet. Thank you, Brett Dawson.
Thanks, guys. Anytime.
All right. That is Brett Dawson, former News Gazette writer, and at the Louisville Courier-Journal.
I didn't mean to throw you under the bus, but that was a great question.
Yeah, well, I always, every year, that's like the biggest. I mean, obviously, unless Illinois is in the title game, and I like watching the title game, but I'm always anxious to see if Illinois is going to have a guy in the one shining moment.
By the way, I think they're back to the Luther Vandross version.
Yes, they are, right? Because Jennifer Hudson's out. Unreal. Tay and Jay Show, 93.5, 95.3.
The new Connect FM.